Mackenzie.
Lamar.
Oscar watch 2025. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm done.
Oh wow, impressive. Yeah, round of applause for you. Well
I'm
done.
done. I am shooketh, actually. I'm quite surprised. I'm very tired of watching movies, actually, which is something I w would never think that I would say. And I know I just said that on a movie podcast, so that's probably sacrilegious almost. But no, yeah, I'm done. I finished a couple days ago, and I feel like they're all kind of running together at this point, just in sheer volume and speed. But I definitely think this is record time. I never have this much spare time. So let's see. The award ceremony is not this Sunday, but the following Sunday. So I have over a week cushion, which has
You don't have to watch
never.
anything. Yeah, you can like go a week and not watch a motion picture. What's that
Yeah,
like?
I don't know that life. That's not a life that I normally have by any means. My letterbox has been getting blown up every day. I'm updating it constantly. So yeah,
Let me
it's
ask
wild.
this. First off, congrats. That's awesome. I
Thank
wish
you.
I had that drive and initiative to do that. But is there one that I think most people who are sort of cinephiles are probably going to watch all the best pictures, but was there one that was kind of under the radar? I know it's nominated for an Oscar, so it's not exactly under the radar, but is there one out of left field
Yeah.
that you kind of recommend everyone make it a point to see?
Yeah, the thing that I think is going to win Best Picture is I don't think the Best Picture. I think it's going to win because it's easy and accessible and not e and it's not a bad film. Let me clarify. I just mean I think it's a safe choice. And there are a lot here that are not a safe choice and I think a lot more interesting in that way. I'm Still There stands out to me. That was a really good film. And it was a semi-fictionalized retelling of the end of the dictatorship in Brazil and how that impacted this one family, like from the perspective of this one family, and especially this their mother, notably, who ends up, I won't give it away, just having this really incredible progression as a character, as a woman, and you find out, of course, that this is a real story. And so she and it's beautifully performed and even just shot, like the locales are gorgeous. So I think it's a really interesting one. I also think there's a speckled in there are several short films that are good that people should check out. I just say that because they're out in theaters right now. They are not usually in theaters long, the shorts. So you can go see the shorts all in one fell swoop in the category that you like. I would say the animated ones for a little were a little bit of a letdown for me this year. There was only one that I liked. So I wouldn't maybe see that one, but the other ones were all really good.
Okay, very cool. Now, not to cut off our traditional cold open format, but that's an
No.
awesome update on Oscar Watch
Thanks.
twenty
Thanks.
twenty five. But I want to play a second little. People who hate cold opens are going to hate this because there's basically two cold opens. I want to play a game with you today. Realized I should have been doing this all month, but I came up with this idea last week and just was like, this would be something fun to do. So
Now we'll
I'm
be
going
ready
to.
for next year, it sounds like.
Yes, this is a running idea that I've got. So what I want to do, I'm going to challenge you to do this without the list at first, but if it's too tough, then we can add some
Okay,
multiple
hang on.
choice
Let
in
me
there for
close the
you.
list. Let me close the list because I had the list up. Okay.
So I'm going to give you a one-star review of a Best Picture winner, and I want you to try to guess which film this person is reviewing.
It's a Best Picture winner. Is
Yes,
there
it
like a
won
time
Best Picture.
frame? Like, is
Just
there
the
a.
last 35 years. But like I
Okay.
said, if it turns out to be, we could pause and I'll let you pull up the list and you can pick from the list. But I want you to try. I
Okay.
feel like you can do it without, because some of
Okay.
these are semi-easy. So, okay,
Okay.
we'll start with this one. Celebration of Mediocrity. Perhaps one of the most overrated movies I've ever seen. I fear for a society that adores and embraces a movie without looking beyond the surface. This movie is at its core a celebration of mediocrity. This movie's designed to make the average person feel great about themselves for being nothing more than average. I agree with the comments that infer a fascist or totalitarian subtext to this movie. It's designed to sedate the viewer into feeling as if the world is fine and dandy just the way it is, and that they too, without doing anything at all to improve, educate, or enlighten themselves, can be a success without trying. A satisfied public is easy to control, for better or worse.
What in the fuck is that?
So what Oscar winner do you feel this person was saying celebrates mediocrity?
Best picture Oscar yeah. winner that celebrates mediocrity.
It's from
With such vitriol. Okay, wait. I feel like you said something about success.
Mm-hmm.
And not doing anything to better yourself. So that's interesting. Is it? Wait, no. Is it Crash?
It's not Crash. It's from okay. the 90s. It's from the 90s. Okay,
from the 90s. From the 90s.
And also, I'll say that this review is very off base. I feel like the character in this, it's not that they're not doing anything. They're actually doing lots of things. Do you want the answer?
Yeah, give me the answer.
Forrest Gump.
What is the actual?
A celebration of mediocrity. But it's like Forrest does everything. He's not mediocre at all. Did you miss the point of the movie?
He's not mediocre at all. Did they even watch it? Jesus. Don't talk about Forrest like that.
That might have been the hardest one to get because I feel like there weren't a lot of little hints in there. So let me give
okay.
you a
yeah, that was weird. One. All right. Okay. Okay.
Okay. Let's see. Don't trust the reviews. I can't understand why this movie got high reviews. It's overly strange, but not in a good way. It's strange in a way that makes absolutely no sense. There's no good acting or effects. The story is almost non-existing. There's no cohesion and no characters that make sense at all. It may have some famous characters or a famous director. I'm not sure. It's like someone did a school project while doing drugs and ended up with this weird but bad result. It's too far-fetched even from an artistic point of view. I cannot recommend it no matter what preferences you may have.
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. All right. See, we got that one. Okay. That one was
which
pretty
which is, high. By the way, a terrible review, but yes, it does jive with the plot. But yeah.
Again, kind of missing the point on that one. Okay. Right. This one, again, might be a little easier. Let's see.
Okay.
Sickening, disturbing to the human spirit. Totally sickening. No redeeming value to the human condition. Why not study the uplifting people in the world instead of getting a view through the eyes of the most degenerate, disgusting, and completely perverted few? The more glimpses they show into the lives of the debased people of the world, the more debased our world becomes. That's deep.
That is deep. That could be a lot of them, though. That could yeah. be a lot of them.
Depending on your viewpoint and how hellfire and brimstone religious you are.
Like, yeah, I feel like best picture winners can get pretty dark and look at some dark stuff. But maybe Spotlight?
Not Spotlight. Before that. Way before that.
Way before that. Okay. No Country for Old Men gets pretty gross. Pretty gnarly.
That's a good guess. That's a solid guess, but it's before that as well.
Okay. Genre? Hint? Do you have a hint that wouldn't give it away?
Thriller, I guess.
Oh. Silence of the Lambs.
Yes. Yeah. Silence of the Lambs. Well done. Yep. Well done.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. A movie for the toilet bowl. This movie is the very epitome of what I hate about movies. That's an interesting sentence. That's the impressive. Hollywoodization and bastardization of what could have been a great film. The effects and action were great. The characterization was adequate. The plot was dumb and the ending was abysmal. Why doesn't anyone in Hollywood have the courage to take a movie where it ought to go instead of where the test audiences say it should go? And now pause here because there's a lot of movie references in this review. In Braveheart, William Wallace didn't rally the Scots, defeat the English, march into London, kill the King of England. Why? Because that isn't what happened. And it would have turned a great movie into a crappy movie. In Dances with Wolves, John Dunbar does not rally the Sioux Nation in a war to conquer the United States. That keep more examples of that. In Gangs of New York, Leo DiCaprio's character did not face Abraham Lincoln in an arena, kill him. I don't know why he would do that in Gangs of New York, but because that isn't what happened, and it would have turned a mediocre movie into a crappy movie. So, something that's taking history, changing it a little bit, and this person does not like it. Got any guesses?
Gosh, there's a lot of those. Argo is a recent winner that they changed some things, but it's pretty accurate, actually.
Not Argo.
What's another? 12 Years a Slave is a Best Picture winner.
That one.
Yeah, those don't sound right, but I'm just listing ones that are based. Because it's supposed to be based on a true story is what they're saying, right? They're upending the story and not doing a good job with it.
I don't know how. I don't know, like, how much of this story is actually steeped in history. It's something that happened, but I don't know if it's based on actual characters, which is, again, part of this reviewer potentially being off base. I'm not smart enough to know that.
Okay.
90s or 2000s? It's right on the cusp there. Could be wrong.
That doesn't sound like Titanic then, because that's, like, close.
That's pretty accurate to what happened, I think.
Yeah. Schindler's List? Story.
Not Schindler's List.
What is a true story winner that would be action oriented, but they would take it too far? Gladiator?
It is Gladiator. Well
How
done.
How could you write that review about Gladiator?
That's what I mean. I'm like, I don't think this was like an actual person. And
he's
not
a real person. The people around him are. He's an amalgamation of several Roman general types. Yeah.
So
he's
Joaquin Phoenix
like two or three key dudes, basically.
Okay. So Joaquin Phoenix's character is an actual
is a real person. Is a real character. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess that review kind of makes sense, but still,
makes
it seems
more
weird
sense.
To give it one star.
Like, but yeah,
I liked everything, but didn't like that it changed history. I hope that person didn't see Inglourious Basterds.
They also didn't do their research either, if that's the review, because again, his character is a blending of several characters, but everyone else is pretty accurate. And actually, the way Joaquin Phoenix's character ends up doing several of the things that he does is pretty accurate. I mean, some of the stuff's obviously implied and dramatized, but a lot of the things that he does are pretty accurate. So, shitty review, dude.
lots of shitty reviews in that mix. Thanks for playing along, even though I kind of put you on the spot there. I also, in looking at that list of the last 30 or 40 years of best pictures, I didn't realize Russell Crowe was in back-to-back best, that and A Beautiful Mind. And I'm like, I'm sure that happens more frequently than you would think, but I'd be curious to Google that at some point of how many times has
that is a good
the
question.
Same person been in best picture back-to-backs.
Yeah. Well, and produced too, I think is actually even more interesting.
Yeah, or directed.
Because,
yeah,
like, Oh, that was a fun one. Okay, yeah, we got to do that next year. All right, let's go. Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar.
And we are finishing up Oscars month with Emilia Perez. And if you haven't heard of this one, number one, I'm shocked. Number two, it's a big one for Oscars month. It set some records here with 13 nominations, among them Best Picture, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actress, so on and so forth. But it's also
most ever for a non-English film. Sorry.
Yes, most ever. Most exactly. Ever. And it has also been pretty controversial in that process as well. I would say wildly controversial. So
yeah, I was going to say, if you haven't heard of it in one capacity, you've probably heard of it in the other.
Right, exactly. So we're gonna need some drinks to get through this is the point. So what are we drinking today?
I mean, to be fair, we need drinks to get through everything.
Everything. All of these.
Like,
all
we
of these
loved
movies.
Flo, but we still needed a drink to survive it. So this is Amelia's Bloodied Orange Margarita. We got 2 ounces of silver tequila, half an ounce of Cointreau, 0.75 ounces of lime, half an ounce of Simple, and then 0.75 ounces of Blood OJ. I had a cop out. I was too lazy to go to Sprouts or whatever and get Blooded OJ. So
I went and got it. Are you so proud? I was.
Let me see the color in yours because
it's funny. Mine
came out. Oh, okay. So they're pretty close.
I used the right amount and it doesn't look very bloodied orange, but.
Yeah. So all that to say, you can use regular orange juice if you're a pleb like myself who can't afford blood orange juice, but you can also throw either some tajin on the rim. I'm going to spare the people at home seeing tajin in my mustache this week. Mackenzie does have it, but I threw some red pepper flakes into the shaker. And so this has got a bit of a kick to it, but pretty damn good.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Cheers.
Cheers.
I must confess that I stole this cocktail name. I was like looking for inspiration and I found somebody else had already named this and I thought it was very punny. So I stole it. However, the recipe is original. We will say that. I did not share the recipe. So that is our recipe by Craft World as per usual, but I just gave him the name. So just for transparency's sake.
We appreciate the honesty here on the pod. The other thing that I wanted to say was that even though it always takes us one drink to get through these, today I'm going to do two. I don't want to ruin that up front for anybody because I did not have a great time with this one, but I also want to pour one out and take a shot in Mexico's honor, because I feel like they're having a rough month between the controversies around this film and the fucking Gulf of America bullshit that's happening. Congratulations, and you got your billionaire friends. Like, just all this shit happening. So, like, this is not in any way poking fun. This is legitimately, sorry that this shit is happening. Sorry about our country.
We love you, Mexico.
Sorry about this French film. Yeah. So cheers to Mexico.
Cheers. Cheers. Yep. In our little wee drink, can we watch things? Shot glasses. Oh. Shout out to my mom. Okay, so with that in mind, number one, as you said, Mexico's going through it. Number two, they hold a special place in my heart. Much of my family is from Mexico. I'm third generation Mexican American. This film was a hard watch for me for a few reasons, and we're going to dig into those. So lots of times we have the spoiler warning, which, don't worry, will come later. This is a controversy warning. We're going to go through the myriad reasons why this film is considered controversial by many communities. And we're going to have that discussion at the top, actually, and get it out of the way. We're going to do our best.
It felt like two different discussions, right? Like, mm-hmm. we even said up front, because I had been hearing some of this in the background, and we said, hey, like, I made it a point to say, I'm going to watch this and try to ignore all of that and just judge it as a film. So I do think it makes sense to, like, let's have the controversy discussion up front, and then let's talk about the movie as a standalone and see where we come out.
Yeah, it was hard. I wish I had seen it, much like some of my friends, actually, that I told you who really loved it. I wish I had seen it before I knew some of this stuff. I think it just unfortunately impacted my experience with the film, that I do think, independent of this controversy, is worth, at the very least, a watch and a consideration. But it does impact it. So let's dig in. A few things I want to summarize. First and foremost, the director of this film is telling a Mexican story. And by that, I mean, it is based in Mexico. It is Mexican characters, by and large, with a couple caveats here and there. And it is Mexican communities, as well as those cultures, as well as that language. The Spanish language is poorly represented in this film for a number of reasons. And the director is French. So I don't think those two can be disconnected. I think this French director does not have a direct connection with the language, doesn't fully understand the translation of the languages. And I am not fluent in Spanish. I'm proficient, but not fluent. So I'm not saying, hey, I can do this better, right? What I'm saying is that the source material is French, both from the novel that this is based on, and the director, who is French and co-wrote the film with several other French writers. So literally the things they are saying are either grammatically incorrect or not a term that you would use in that context, so on and so forth. That has been addressed with the director directly. He pushed back on the feedback that he should have done more research about Mexico and about Spanish. He felt that he knew everything that he needed to know about Mexico. He said, I already know enough about this, and I knew what I needed to know to tell the film that I wanted to do.
He knew a bit, and that was enough.
Oof, I can already feel myself getting spicy, y'all. I'm sorry. That's really like, I'm not okay with that response. That's a really ridiculous response to an entire culture that I know a bit about, and that's sufficient. Another thing, staying with the director here, one of the things that he did was hire non-Mexican actors, actresses, and production crew. He claims that the reason that he hired people who are not of Mexican origin, native Mexicans, who, while of Hispanic origin, again, not Mexican origin, was because of funding for the film. He said that he was going to be more likely to get funding and investment if he had bigger names like a Selena Gomez and a Zoe Saldana. I hear that to some degree. However, there was another comment that I, unfortunately, today was not able to resurface, but I found one prior where he was like, I just couldn't find the right actors and actresses, which is a different reason. And the second explanation came much later after a lot of blowback. The first explanation was, I just couldn't find people good enough, was kind of the way that he was phrasing it. And also, again, I think did not appreciate that assessment, that there would be no really strong Mexican actors who could take on the roles.
I mean, going in line with what you're saying about the budget, that kind of tracks with what I saw of, like, this was all filmed in Paris. So he didn't go far from home to make this film. So it's like, maybe just don't make the movie then. If you're not going to film in Mexico, you're not going to cast Mexicans to play these characters. The only other thing I wanted to call out to add to what you said is this is a completely fictionalized story. It's set within a real world in a real tragedy that is still taking place to this day of drug cartels. So I understand what this movie is trying to do with representation and telling a transgender story, which I think is very important. But to know that you're trying to do that, but to do it in the most half-assed way possible, I think is what makes it troublesome.
Yeah. And I think, to be fair and show the other side of this coin, one of the lead actresses, she actually doesn't have the most screen time, but she is an important actress in this. Adriana Paz is actually Mexican. Mm-hmm. And she disagreed with this assessment of the film. She thought that it didn't reflect poorly on Mexicans. She wasn't upset that more Mexicans weren't cast, things like that. She actually single-handedly handled a press conference in Mexico because the director pulled out at the last minute because of the controversy. I have multiple issues with that. One, she showed up great at that and handled that questioning the best she could. Two, she's having to represent a film about which she's hopefully proud of her work. So I doubt she wants to undermine that in those conversations, regardless of whatever her personal feelings may or may not be. And I'm not assuming what they are, by the way. I'm just saying, I don't think she gets to say everything the way she wants to in this particular context. And then finally, the fact that he couldn't stand up and defend his work, and he pulled out hours before the press conference and left her to do it herself. I can tell you right now, before we even keep going, I have a very low opinion of this director. I don't think that he respected the communities that he was trying to represent. I think he's a little bit of a coward. And I also think that he isn't as original as he thinks he is. And we'll get into that a little bit later. I don't love that. I don't respect that. So going on through some additional things that happened around this film, sticking with stereotypes and things like that, we have portrayals of Mexican communities and cartels and disappearances that are perceived by a lot of people as being insensitive to the realities of these things that do happen in Mexico and happen to real people and real families. And they feel that this is kind of not only stereotyped, but glazed over a bit, and also set as though it's this dramatic backdrop rather than people's real lives. And also perpetuating this negative Mexican stereotype that if you are in Mexico, that clearly there's cartel drug violence all around, no matter where you are, what community you're in, so on and so forth. So just the generalizations around that and the representation of that was very poorly received by a lot of folks.
I think that's what happens when you do a bit, not even of research, but you know your bit of information, that's what you go off of, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I have these conversations, I mean, outside of this film, I have these conversations with friends of mine, you know, people who are not Hispanic or not Mexican, who say things about Mexico that really offend me. It's not all drug cartels and dirty brown people. I'm sorry. I'm really sick of this stereotype. They literally put the lead actress, and we will say actress, she, her, those are her identifiers, both as the character and as a person. So that's what we're going to say. But when she is playing the cartel leader, she is in brown face. She has dirty brown hair. The stereotypes are rampant in this film, and it's a lot. Another thing about language. Selena Gomez is Mexican-American, same as me. She's born in America. She actually spoke Spanish as a child, but once she started acting primarily in English, she sort of lost that skill set. So her Spanish is not as strong as some of the other characters, and some people have had issues with her accent and her attempts to speak Spanish in the film. There's been some criticism of the director assuming that she spoke Spanish because she has Mexican parents. So some things like that. She has since said that she did the best she could prepping with the time that she had. Also, her character is supposed to be US-based as well. So Mexican-American heritage. Her family is from the US. She wants to go home to the US multiple times throughout the film. So she has argued that it fits with her character. But there's been pushback both ways.
Well, not to make light of that situation, but I feel like that's my icebreaker if I ever meet Selena Gomez, because my last name's Ortiz. And when I was a middle school teacher, everyone assumed I spoke Spanish. It's like, oh, can you talk? Can you translate? It's like, no. So, Selena, we got something in common.
Yeah, you can saunter up to her at the bar and ask her that question. And meanwhile, my name, widest name in history, Mackenzie Wayne, I'm of Hispanic origin. I'm not fluent, but I'm decent. I'm proficient.
How are you being a cowboy? Do you have that in common with John?
Is that your uncle? I'm actually great at that. But you know,
yeah,
courtesy,
I've seen you in personally, cowboy boots.
Courtesy of my Hispanic grandfather, though. I'll just tell you that. Okay, I grew up on that ranch. So yeah, John Wayne would be proud is what I would also say. Yeah. So a couple things about the actresses in general who are cast in this film. One of the things, as I said, was about Selena Gomez's performance. People felt also that her speaking ability, just a quick nugget there, hindered her performance because she didn't understand how to accent and emphasize the things that she was saying. People felt like she was saying speaking a language she couldn't identify with appropriately. So that was more what it was about. Our lead actress, we really can't ignore the profound controversy surrounding her. Carla Sofía Gascón has drawn significant backlash for myriad comments that are offensive to a number of communities, Black communities, Islamic communities. She has said Islamophobic, xenophobic, racist things, including but not limited to things about George Floyd after his death, calling him an addict, saying that Islam was basically infecting the Western world and their values, that it's not a feminist culture and women are not free in this culture, things like that, that they don't share Western values, so on and so forth. There actually are over a dozen tweets along those lines that were found about her prior comments that are really, really inappropriate to a number of communities. She has defended them a number of times, saying that her ex or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, was like a diary entry for her. And the way that she would build up roles that were both fictional and non-fictional feels like a crock of shit, if you ask me. Yep. She is also, yeah. Okay, great.
I'm sitting here nodding along with you, and I remember some people just listen to the audio, but I'm in agreement with everything Mackenzie's saying, y'all.
Yeah, feels like a crock shit. She also has made comments about the reception of the film and that it is largely due to a slanderous campaign by members of the production of I'm Still There, a Brazilian film that I actually mentioned in our cold open. That's a violation of Oscar rules, in case you weren't aware, to make accusations about interference in the Oscar race in that way, to make false accusations about, you know, these kinds of comments about other films. She says that she wasn't saying that it was anybody involved with the film. She defends that she meant social media was doing this, not so much the film participants. Again, feels like a walk back to me personally. She's since removed herself from the conversation. She has skipped events. She has apologized-ish. And by apologized, I mean not apologized for her comments. And she refused to remove herself from the Oscar race, from contention. She says she's broken no laws. And if people were offended, she's sorry. So I hate those kinds of apologies personally.
If somebody's offended, I'm sorry. Yeah.
If you're offended, I'm sorry if I offended you. No, bitch, take responsibility for the things that you say.
Also, just like I didn't see any of Sophia's quotes about this, and so I don't want to put this on her, but just because you criticize a piece of art that has someone of a specific demographic in it does not make you phobic or racist or anything like that. So you can critique this film and say that it's not good without being transphobic, because I feel like that is the thing. If people are like, oh, well, if you don't like this, it's because you're transphobic. And it's like, no, dude, I don't have any trans friends. If I did, that'd be fucking awesome. I have friends from all of the spectrum, but I can
really
watch.
Does.
Yeah, so I can watch.
I can attest.
The Super Bowl and say Travis Kelce had a shit performance at the Super Bowl. That doesn't make me racist against white people or any other player that I choose to critique, right? So I don't like this thought that this film is not open to criticism because it has representation. Yes, that is a good thing, but like, there's been a lot of bad movies with black people in them. There's been a lot of bad movies with Indian people, with white people, with every religion and political belief, all these different things. So don't sit here and tell me that it's offensive to criticize this, because it's not a good film, in my opinion.
And I think, speaking of representation, one of the critiques of this film is the representation. Yes, it is awesome that there is a trans woman actress being one of, also not, but one of the leads of this film, and secondarily nominated for the awards that she has been nominated for, and also that she has won. So she won at Cannes, she won at several awards. But the there's criticism from many communities, like I said at the top. One of them is the trans community to some degree. So GLAAD actually said that the film is actually a poor representation for trans people, calling it profoundly retrograde. They said that it was subpar, disingenuous, harmful nonsense. And they said it critiques the unrealistic depictions of gender affirmation surgery, saying the film displayed an understanding of plastic surgery that's about as refined as McGee's recent Uglies. So there's a number of misrepresentations of how surgery works, how you can go about getting it, the cost of surgery, things like that.
You mean that a sex change surgery can't change the color of your skin? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, actually. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Again, speaking to the brown face that happened at the beginning of this film, she later has much lighter skin, blonder hair, a number of things that are misrepresented. Also, Mexico, fun fact, is third in the world for gender affirmation surgery, and was at the time of this film, and they chose to depict this surgery happening in Israel. So interesting choice for a film of this type. So yeah, another last thing, I think there's actually a lot of controversy. We're not going to spend the whole time talking about it, but one other thing I think it is worth bringing up is the use of AI in this film, which is that it is used to tweak the performances of the lead actress's vocals at a number of different points in the film. So early on, so she had already transitioned as an actress outside of this film. She had already transitioned before filming this. So they say that she couldn't get her voice low enough for the earlier songs in the film where she is still a male leader of this drug cartel. Later, they felt that she just couldn't hit the notes, maybe some of the high notes. So there is a use of AI to clean up the singing vocals of the lead actress in this film. And I struggle with that. I mean, not just because of AI. I mean, AI freaks me out, but I also use it like it's a problem. You know, my Alexa is going to come kill me when it's all over. You know what I mean? But I will say auto-tune in some format has existed for many, many years. So it's not the most controversial thing of this film for me personally. But it is a hot topic now, and it is something that people are sensitive to when it comes to creating art using artificial intelligence versus just letting those who can create the art create.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, was there's a difference between using AI to do it and just having a producer in the sound booth manually make these modifications. I think that's the main difference, right? I will say it took a little bit out, not to jump into the film itself. I know it's going to be a different discussion, but it took a little bit away from the performance of Sophia in this, because I was actually texting our friend Nathan about this, and he said, well, how is the lead actress? And I went, I actually really liked her performance when she was transitioning. Yeah. Because I thought the voice was really good, and I went, wow, she's really pulling this off. And then when I found out it was computer generated, basically, I was less impressed.
Yeah.
She's still good, but that part, I was like, eh.
I agree. I think she still gives a good performance. Here's what I will say about every single nomination, maybe not every single one, but I would say if you look at the fact that it is so well nominated, I think it makes sense. That's not my problem with this film. The performances are good and it's creative, but it's not as original and creative, again, as I think people think that it is, at least in my view. And again, I went into it with some bias. I can't pretend that I didn't. So it just is the reality that was my watching experience. If you want to dig into the additional controversies of this film, there actually are more. Those are the most significant, I think, and the most prevalent, and they inform our conversation the most probably, but there are more. Are there any that you felt I left out, Lamar?
The only thing that I wanted to do was I was trying to, even before I saw this, and this was probably a mistake on my part because it probably would have been good for me to watch this blind, for lack of a better word, of just let me go in and make my own thoughts before I know about all this other shit.
No.
But I had heard so much about it that to the point of, I thought, do we even want to cover this on the podcast?
We debated that, y'all. We did.
If it's this risky, like, do we want a court controversy? But I think it's good we're talking about it. So I was doing a little bit of research, and I pulled this comment off Reddit of somebody trying to find out, hey, what's the big deal? I'm out of the loop. Tell me what's wrong with this movie. Mm-hmm. And so this comment, I'll read real quick as fast as I can, from Radish Relevant. I don't make the usernames, but... So I'm going to read this message, and I feel like it's very easy to make a World War II Holocaust type. That's like the go-to tragedy everyone uses for an analogy. And if you don't like that, take 9/11, take whatever tragedy is relevant to your country and put yourself in these shoes. But I'll read this. Imagine I made a movie where an SS officer in Auschwitz, horrified by what he's done, wants to run away and live a new life as a woman. And he's treated like a completely redeemable and good-hearted but, quote, complex character. Even the prisoner he threatens to help him out is confusingly passionate about this endeavor. You don't understand, he had a rough upbringing. Then on top of that, instead of doing my research on Germany or hiring German actors, I hire the people near my area who speak a little German. Heck, one of them's Polish, but who cares? It's similar, right? We'll take what we can get. It's impossible to find decent actors in Germany. Then, regardless of accent, poor writing, bad translations, etc., as a director, I just nod my head at what my translator tells me. That sure sounded German. Good for me. Let's put a beer in his hand. Authenticity is important. Then the movie is showered in awards by Americans who are equally as ignorant on German culture. Meanwhile, all German criticism is treated as anti-trans or out of touch with the artistry before their eyes. Replace all of this with Mexico and the cartel, and that about sums it up.
Keep so, sighing. Yeah. I'm trying to keep my emotions in check, y'all. I don't love it.
Radish Relevant, you have brought tears to Mackenzie's eyes. So Reddit user Radish Relevant. it's rough, dude. And I feel for you. I'm imagining what it would be like if in 10 years somebody makes a 9/11 film from another country and it's like, we're getting British people to play them and they're clearly speaking in British accents, but it's okay because we couldn't find any good American act. Like it's not
our story to tell. You know, it's not our story. Right. It's somebody else has to co-opt our story. So I think let's focus on the film as a whole real quick. There's going to continue to be comments, right, about what this does, as far as representation throughout the film. So we'll get into some of that. I'm going to blow through some basics and then there's going to be yet another spoiler warning. And I really mean it this time. I'm actually going to blow through
the
basics.
I feel like we discussed them in depth during that first section. Right. So literally, I think the only name we didn't mention was the director.
There's a couple other actors, but yes, we didn't. And I also like the director I'm so upset with that I just don't even want to say his name. So I was actively avoiding it, but now I will tell y'all who this is. So Emilia Perez, 2024. This is rated 5.5 out of 10 on IMDb. Has a 72% from critics on Rotten Tomatoes, but here's my favorite, a 16% from audiences. So... Jeez. It's going gangbusters, y'all. The director is Jacques Audiard. He did Rust and Bone, which I haven't seen, so I can't speak to his prior work, really. The Sister Brothers, also haven't seen. Rust and Bone actually has been on my list for a long time, and now I'm not sure if I'm going to watch it. Anyway, the writers of this film, as I said earlier when we're talking about some of the controversies, are all French, include the director as well as Boris Rasson, who's the only other one I'm going to call out. He wrote the novel, which is Écoute, which, guys, I'm not pretending to be French. That is probably a horrible representation of that language and accent.
But we're not going to make a movie about it. With
we're
you
not
going to
make a movie about it. I'm not going to AI the fucking accent. I butchered it, and I apologize.
Did you see the little factoid? Like, it was so, granted, two wrongs don't make a right, but apparently there was a trans director in Mexico. I want to get the name right. Mm-hmm. Camila Aurora Gonzalez, who made basically a spiteful film.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. I wanted to. Yes, her response film, which is
Johann Sacre Bleu, which again, offensive.
Offensive.
But that's kind of the point, is like, you did this to us, we're doing it back. Not saying it's right, but that's how much vitriol this has instilled in people.
And if y'all can, it is on YouTube. I do not speak French. It is in French. And I could not get the English subtitles to work. I tried to watch this film, but it is, yes, supposed to be a response to, I have used all French actors, all French material, and it's in French, but it's all shot in Mexico by Mexican people and all that. So I think it, yeah, not to put too fine a point on it, does exactly what this film does. Major cast and crew, Zoe Saldana, who I would just clarify is not my problem here. I think she's fabulous. She is the lead actress in this, and there's a lot of category fraud, is a term you may or may not heard in award season. People submit, the producers submit people and the film itself for awards in categories that they think they can win. That's the reality. And so she is actually the lead billed actress in this film, not Carla Sofía Gascón. And she is submitted for Best Supporting at the Oscars.
Interesting.
And I think a little bit of that is like, hey, we have this groundbreaking trans woman actress who did a great job. Let's put her forward as the lead. Listen, the one flaw every single year that you will encounter in award season, and it's just the reality, is that it is politics. It's awards politics, and there's a lot of marketing that goes into this. I don't watch all of them because I'm not aware of that. I watch all of them because it's fun to me. I like to see a lot of films because they're more accessible than, say, a Sundance film all the time, right? So
yeah, it's like loosely defined too, of, well, how much screen time or what dictates who is the lead versus who is supporting. Because Anthony Hopkins had, what, 15 minutes of screen time for Silent, not saying it wasn't deserved, but he won best lead, right?
That's a great call out, because Zoe Saldana has the most screen time here. What I love about her, though, is that, well, one, she plays Rita, the lawyer, who I think is a really interesting character. And despite the things that we have already said about this film that we don't love, I like her as a character. I think she's intriguing and interesting. She gives an incredible performance as well. She's been in Guardians, as we all know, probably. And I say we all, because I'm pretty sure most of you fuckers know. She was in all the Guardians. It's a big deal, right?
But wearing green face, equally green problematic.
Also problematic. Fucking alien vibes, y'all. But one of my favorites of her is her first, I did actually not know this at the time, but her first film role is Center Stage, which I'm not going to reveal my age. My girlies out there, y'all know how we felt about that film, and she was great in it. So good fun fact for Zoe. That was her first one. Carla Sofía Gascón, as we said, she plays Amelia, the titular character, which is an easy reason to say this is the lead. So also clarifying that, but also Manitas, which is the cartel drug lord version of her pre-transition. Most of her work, you're probably not going to know her for, just given that it's usually very regional work. But one of the ones that she's most well known for is We Are the Nobles. It's the only English titled film that she's done. And I say that because of our audience. Just to clarify. Selena Gomez, she plays Jessie. She is a pop star, y'all. I think you all know this. She's been in about 12,000 music videos and also a bunch of TV. She was like a Disney-esque or Nickelodeon. I can't keep track. Sorry, call me a boomer. Whatever. She was in a lot of those. And then she also did Spring Breakers, which is, I think, one of her most like film roles that she's done.
I didn't realize she plays Mavis in all the Hotel Transylvania films with like Adam Sandler. I've only seen, I think, one of them, but I didn't know that was her. So good for her.
She did. And then now she's doing, and I haven't seen it. I've heard I'm going to love it. I will watch it. Don't come for me. Only Murders in the Building. I've heard she's really good
Janelle
in as
likes
well.
That. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And she's really close with like Steve Martin and that. And seems like she's good peeps, and she's, in my eyes at least, as the old lady that I am, kind of growing up, because for me, she was always like a little kid actor in my brain, and she's breaking out of that for sure. Adriana Paz, as we said, she is the actress who is from Mexico, which is awesome. She is Epifania, How do we say this? I don't remember.
Epiphania.
I'm sorry. She's Epiphania. And she plays, again, another person whose work we're not going to all recognize. So the thing that she's most well known for is Hilda. And she actually was Inspector with Daniel Craig, but literally her title was like Woman in the Elevator.
Movie needs a woman in an elevator.
They fucking do. And I bet she crushed it. So anyway, just thought y'all should know she was in that. Also, Edgar Ramirez, who a lot of you probably know, but he actually hasn't been in as many things as I feel like he's been in. He plays Gustavo Brune. He's been in Point Break. He's been in some TV more recently. He did Florida Man. But one of the more recent ones that I actually saw him in and really liked was Dr. Death. And if you're a true crime girly like me, both in podcast and TV form, that comes in both. And he was in the most recent iteration of that.
He looks good, man. I didn't realize he was in Point Break. I mean, this is what, 30 years ago? Jeez, 35.
He looks great in all the things. He is a handsome man. All right, plot summary very quickly before we go into spoilers. Emilia Perez follows three remarkable women in Mexico, each pursuing their own happiness. Cartel leader Emilia enlists unappreciated lawyer Rita to help fake her death so that she can finally live authentically as her true self. All right, kids, spoiler warning, turn around, don't drown. It's spoiler time. I also
This fucking movie.
Listen, okay, we're not the only ones who feel this way about this movie. This had a production budget of $26 million, which is not crazy. It's a reasonable budget, whatever, and it made $15.2 million. So we are not alone in our feelings about this film. I don't have a ton that I want to add to the controversy aspects of it, but I do want to highlight some things that I think are positive about it, because there are some. I don't want to be a total asshole. I think the music is fun. I do. I think the music is interesting. It's not incredible. It's not the best musical I've ever seen, but I think it's still a good time. I think the points at which it uses music can be a bit surprising. Like, maybe they're not always where I expected a musical break to be, you know?
Personally, go ahead. I disagree. I think if you know, it takes a lot to get me to like a musical. I don't love a ton of musicals. I like some, you know, I enjoyed Wicked.
I like all musicals. So let's, for context for everybody, it makes sense.
So being a theater teacher, I got into some musicals, but I feel like if you're going to tell such dark subject matter and you're going to choose to make it a musical, you better make sure the music is good. And I just felt like in this, the songs were very short. There's several of them that are shorter than 90 seconds. And it almost just feels like we're throwing a quote unquote song in here just so that we can call it a musical. And it's more like, it's a lot of talk singing. I think that somebody saw Hamilton and was like, let's just do that. But they're not really going to rap. They're more just going to talk instead of singing.
I was going to say, if they had rapped, it would have worked better then. Yeah.
Honestly. Yeah. Like when Manitas first meets Rita and does like that little rap, the first 20 seconds of it, I was like, oh, this motherfucker's spitting. It was actually pretty damn good. And then I kept waiting for like a beat to drop, but then it just sort of ended. And I was like, oh, okay. It just, there wasn't enough actual sing. Even Selena Gomez, her first song is mostly just her kind of like talk singing. And it's like, why are we not?
It's also like over an hour in, if I recall correctly. Like, I just feel like she's the most experienced perhaps singer that you have in the cast, and you're I think underutilizing that. And then I agree with you, it's very talk singy for someone who sings professionally.
Yeah, there's no real recurring melodies. Most of the songs don't have melodies. It's just kind of like, we are talking about what's happening now, this is happening, end of song. Like, it just I didn't love that throughout. I'm sure there was another one, the fucking song at the first sex change, the hospital that she visits. I started laughing. I don't know if like, it just felt so goofy and poorly performed, and they're singing about like all these procedures, but it's there again.
That felt very conversation to song. I will say that is one of the examples I agree where the conversation to song transition felt really random and abrupt. I don't think the song was like bad, but I agree with you. It felt like a weird place to put it.
That point in the film is where I started watching it as a, this is going to seem weird to say, I started watching this as a campy, dark comedy, knowing that it was a fictional situation. And yeah. This was a made up character, again, happening in real circumstances, was this, which is
this
a tragedy.
Was your coping mechanism, is what you're but telling I was, me?
This movie is clearly going for camp. It's trying to be over the top and silly in some ways. And honestly, mark my fucking words, in 10 years time, this is going to be at like midnight or 10 p.m. screenings at movie theaters. Sing-alongs of people ironically singing along to this because they think it's meant to be a comedy, a la The Room or Rocky Horror. I think that is what's going to happen.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Well,
not
we'll
to
see.
Say it makes it any less offensive for all the things we discussed in the first half of the episode.
Yeah.
But that's where I see this going, because I don't think it's going to win a ton of the Oscars now that all this shit's come out.
I was going to say it's not going to win nearly as much just because of all this shit. It would have won a lot, actually, regardless of how good or bad it was, had all this not come out. And it just the director didn't do himself, who I just refused to use his name. He just didn't do himself any favors. And then actually neither did anybody else. He also threw Carla Sofia under the bus, by the way. He was very like, I don't know why she's doing what she's doing. I don't know why she doubles down. He cut ties on her. And I'm like, bitch, you're just as problematic. What are you guys talking about? You're all terrible. Anyway, sorry.
I wrote down that this at times, again, I think there is 50% of a really good film in this. If you got rid of the musical component and you just told this story and you upped a couple of the components of the script, because I think the last act kind of falls apart, but I do think there's half of a good film in this. But I wrote down near the beginning, this feels a little like community theater. Like some the songs, it feels like I made a musical and just put my friends on stage to perform it, because the song where she's singing to herself when she gets the offer to go meet Manitas, and she's in the bathroom and she's like, why did he call me? Why at the newsstand? I'm like, what the fuck is happening right now? It just didn't land for me.
I have a few thoughts here. One, like I said, my default setting is like, I love a musical. I want it to be good. Even when they're not as good, I will give them a lot of grace. Fair. So I maybe gave it some grace here because I was like, I love a musical. I thought that first scene where you have the first musical number with Zoe Saldana, where she's working and prepping for this case. I thought that was creative. I thought it was interestingly shot. I thought it was, it's not where you expected it to go, as far as like you don't expect it again to break out into song, even though you know it's a musical. This doesn't feel like the low-hanging fruit of the scenes that you would have this happen in. And I like how you saw just kind of how haggard she is, the way she's thinking about her cases, who she is in relation to this story, to this her job, like how dissatisfied she is. I think her performance is very strong. I think her established character and her community is well done. Across the board in this film, I like every scene that she's in. I think she does a great job. I think she steals the musical performances, partially because I think she does an incredible job, but also partially because you don't expect, nor do you usually see this from Zoe Saldana. So like you get this experience of her as an actress being really incredible and different. And I think that's really an enjoyable part of this film for me. And she kept kind of saving that for me personally. I thought she did great in the dinner party later, much further down the film. So I hate to jump around, but that's another scene that really jumps out for me as far as her performance, both from a dance and a song perspective. The musical aspects for me and her are really strong, other than that scene with the doctor where I'm like, this feels awkward.
That song too, dude. I just, at some point I was like, this has to be, like somebody is punking me right now. This has to be like, he's a lady, you have to do blah, blah, blah. And it was just, not great for me. But you did mention two or three things that I wanted to call out on the, I agree with a few of your positives. I think despite me not liking a lot of the songs and the music in this, the choreography is pretty damn good. And the way the that they stage some of them, that one in the streets that you mentioned, and especially the dinner party, I love that juxtaposition of Rita going around the audience and calling people out and sort of doing her own one person show out there while Amelia is on stage giving the speech. I think that's awesome. The lighting is really cool. In the dinner scene you mentioned, when the lights go down and they have their conversation and they do like kind of a little song there, I think there's a lot to like there. And then you also called out, obviously, so Zoe's performance and even the makeup, you know, the offensive brown face shit and the terrible beard glue aside, I think that Zoe's makeup is really well done at the beginning when she's got like the dark circles under her eyes. Like she looks like a different person compared to when we see her later. So those three things I enjoyed.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you're supposed to see that transition in her. Like, even though this being asked by a drug cartel leader to help him find a doctor that will do a gender affirmation surgery and then pull yourself out of a career, which is really unsatisfying in a number of ways anyway. There's implications, obviously, that this is quite a corrupt system and she can't make an impact and things like that, is a really weird way to find your bliss, right? But as the summary said, she's trying to find her own joy. She's trying to find a way to be, you know, successful. And it's kind of like the ends justify the means for her, right? Of I am working with this cartel boss who has done horrific things that we cannot ignore, but to give myself a personal freedom that I really need. And you get that transition to, for her as well, that Manitas has transitioned to Amelia, but she has transitioned into herself. She's in London. She gets to be this different person. She gets to have satisfaction from her career. And then they come back together. And it's so beneficial for both of these women in different ways, right? This is the only person on planet Earth who knows who she is, first of all. So she gets to have a bond with her that she wouldn't have with anybody else, because she's withholding her identity as Manitas from everybody else and wants to just be Amelia now. Yes, she's some wealthy whoever, nobody really cares, but that is sort of glazed over so that they can bond again. I think that's a bit unrealistic, right? Of how would she explain herself? How would she live in the places she has? What would her security think? Like, I had so many questions coming out of that dynamic. The only thing that made sense to me is that she would seek Rita out in a search for somebody who knows who she is and some familiarity, even if it's not like low-hanging fruit for this person's gonna be my best friend, actually. It's just, this is the only person who really knows me. And then their relationship develops from there. It feels almost like a requirement, though. It feels like I'm being forced to be your friend because I'm the only option that you have.
Don't forget that she has a plastic bag pulled over her head because of this person's orders and threatening. So them becoming besties later on and, oh, she's like a sister to me. I think that's why from the outset, and you guys will hear me A, clearing my throat a lot today, and B, clicking my mouse to mute myself so you don't hear me clear my throat. I'm getting over a cold. I apologize. But from the outset, the script is flimsy to me. Because you're asking the audience to say, because this person from a child wanted to be a different gender, but was born into a difficult circumstance, but then did a ton of terrible fucking things, that it's okay because now they feel kind of bad about it. I wrote down at the end of just this whole karma and goodwill thing isn't going very far for me, because essentially you're saying, well, cool, I'm going to help these families find the bodies that I buried, and that's going to make me feel better about myself. That just does not, the script to me, that's the backbone of it, and it kind of falls apart for me.
Yeah, I think it's a good call out. I think it's an important call out. It's a hard topic because, again, this is where we bleed into, these are real people's lives, and in some context, these are real people's lives, right? These disappearances happen. Cartels do impact real people's lives. Disappearances in and outside of Mexico, by the way, and Latin America in general, are not unheard of, and they're for a number of reasons. And what she does as Amelia is undeniably a good thing, right? What she decides to do with her wealth, with her time, with her efforts, bringing Rita in as well, is undeniably a good thing. But how much of it is retribution for things that she did to this community in the first place is a great question, and one that we should ask and are really responsible for asking here.
And also even Rita calls out how much of the money is dirty, because these right. people at this dinner that are supporting your good endeavors are all crooked. So that right. again takes away from it to me.
And how much of this is again like this ends justifies the means mentality of how many compromises will I make as a person to get to this end result, right? And right now the end result is I am going to help people. In the past, the end result has been either selfish or bad for these various characters. And are we able to watch these characters and believe in their redemption? That's the question that we're asking here. And I think the other aspect that we need to touch on is Amelia responsible for Manitas? Given that we don't really understand Manitas's origin, like we don't get that story. I don't get the story of, you know, you hear this all the time. Was the monster made or was the monster born? Right.
Yeah, and nature versus nurture.
Right. And like the way in which you come up in this world can't be overlooked. I mean, if you are born into a cartel, if you are raised by sicarios, then this is the culture, this is the world that you understand. And maybe he never wanted it when he was Manitas, but she as Amelia is truly being herself and wants to recover from that and make up for that. And should we give her a chance to do that? I think that's part of what this film is asking. And if you can look at it that way, it can be an interesting consideration. It can be an interesting discussion. I just don't think that this person and this film was the way to do that with any kind of nuance. They don't do it with any kind of nuance. You don't actually have that discussion or consideration in this film. You just accept that Amelia is now good. And it's like this, it's like, she's beautiful. And there's these beautiful stories that are happening. She's found a new love. She's spending her money on good things for her ex-wife and her children that she's forcibly reunited with, to be honest.
Well, can I expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, yeah. Because she just continues to be problematic is what I was going to say.
Yes.
And, yeah.
And that's, I'm glad you were going down that road, because we had sort of said, well, now that she's Amelia, she's made this change and wants a new life for the right reasons. I sure. think I misread the beginning when I initially watched it, but I had to go and like review the notes and whatnot. But I had thought, oh, she's disguising her identity to get away from this life because she's in legal trouble. That wasn't the case. Yeah. It was more just like, I want to be a woman. This is the life I want for myself. Yeah. I want to change, be a better person. Totally get that. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. But we see it come out. I feel like the relationship between Amelia and Jesse is probably really the most interesting part of the film to me. But when she does...
That is a, I think, beautiful relationship. If you can look at it independently of other things, which is hard.
Yeah, and you see it play out in these sort of different phases of like what exactly is happening? Why are we being summoned back to Mexico, and now we're living with this cousin of my yeah. former husband, and cares very, very much for the children. But then we see that bad side come out when Amelia yeah. is having these conversations of like, oh, what do you mean you're seeing someone else? Did you ever cheat on your husband? And we're seeing this jealousy and protectiveness come out to the point that Amelia gets very possessive, which to me seemed again backwards, because you've literally moved on with your life in more ways than one. I just didn't get that.
I think her possession is less about, I agree with you, but I think her possession is less about her going off and being with other men or anybody, right? I think it's more about the kids. And the control about the kids, right? And so she's very, I don't get the sense, and I had that question as well, to be fair, as I'm watching it. I'm like, does she care what Jesse does with men because she still loves Jesse, right? Or does she care because of the family? And I feel as I kept watching it that it was very much about Jesse and the kids. And to the degree that she really shields the kids from Jesse's behavior, which objectively is not great when they get back, which, to be fair, you have to give Jesse some grace here of she's been pulled all over Kingdom Come. She still has never gotten to really go home, or as far as she sees it, her home, and be with her family. she's beholden to her now dead husband, even now. And like, yeah. You would have a reaction to that as a person, as a woman, as a whatever, it doesn't matter. Just not feeling free is a problem for fucking anybody. So I want to give her a little bit of grace there, but I also want to recognize that she's not thinking about her kids when she gets back. You know, when she gets back to Mexico, she's letting this mysterious aunt come front and center and take over her responsibilities as a mom, which if you don't know her truly the way that you think you do, why would you let someone do that? You know, and I think what's hard for me when watching that story is, again, looking at the premise of these three women are trying to find their joy and become their most authentic selves. I struggle with having any sympathy for Jessie early on, where she's not, again, being a good mom, which is, by the way, not the limit of people's identity. That is not what I'm saying. But she seems to not care about her children at all when she first gets back. And I don't love that for her. There's an implication, again, that she cheated on Manitas back in the day, but you don't get enough of that story. So I think I come back to, like, the writing here is weak. Of there's just not enough pulling me back to, like, why do I care about this? Why do I not think the worst of her? Why am I supposed to think positively of her in this context? So on and so forth, kind of throughout of, I need more meat on these bones to get what you're trying to tell me. And the flashbang of it all is not going to sell me on it.
Yeah. There are hints. The tiny little hints are there. When Jessie talks about, you know, after the kids were born, something changed. And based on what we know about Amelia Manitas, we know that Manitas was on hormone therapy. So clearly, like, that's going to have an impact on the relationship, right? So we get, like, you can piece it together as the viewer. But I just felt, for the way it plays out, for sort of Gustavo ending up being sort of the main villain of the story in a way, he doesn't get enough screen time. We don't really see enough of their dynamic. Yeah. It's just sort of like, here's the guy she's interested in. Now they're doing karaoke. Now Amelia orders the shit kicked out of him to sort of threaten to get out of town so that Jessie doesn't leave. Okay, now he's taken Amelia hostage. It's literally four scenes. And I didn't love that.
Yeah, and I think you don't get buy into who Gustavo is other than he's probably bad. Like, in some ways. And he then does really horrible, obnoxious things that make you not like him. But again, what is their story together? Did they really fall in love and it wasn't intentional? And like, listen, I'm not pro affair, but like, give me a reason to care about their relationship and why he wouldn't just abandon her and take the money and run, you know? And the fact that he doesn't, is that more about her as a person and that he loves her? Or is that about, we think we can get more out of the situation, we can get more money, we can get more acts, whatever. Like, why are you trying to do this in this way? And this is the first time and the most intense time we have seen Jessie care about her kids, and it has led to this incredible escalation of violence. And so again, you don't trust her with her kids, even in this context where she is supposedly doing this to protect her kids from her.
I will say that initial argument between Jessie and Amelia about the kids, I think that might be the best scene in the movie for me, like the best acting, the most emotion. But then it just got kind of silly after that. I also don't love the fact that we've talked about Amelia in her past had done these terrible things as Manitas. Now she's trying to make up for them and doing her best. But the reason this all falls apart is because she falls into these bad habits of, like, it's, I get why you don't want to lose your kids, but at the same time, you left them for 4 years, you moved on with your life,
you're seeing people. You chose your identity and your authenticity, and fine, that's not a non-issue, I'm not saying that, but you chose that over them. Mm-hmm. That is a choice that you made, And you don't get to have your cake and eat it too and control everyone in the process. And that was what stood out to me the whole time, is that she wants to have her cake and eat it too. She wants her new partner. She wants her best friend. She wants all her money. She wants to control her ex-wife, and she wants to have her kids, while already having abused and controlled so many of these people as manitas.
You just did Emilia Perez's Infinity Gauntlet on your hand. You were like, she wants her kids. She wants this.
She does snap. She wants the gauntlet, and she wants to snap it and have everything go her way. You're 100% right. And it's not realistic, and it is not something that endears us to her, because you are really right. Just emulating manitas again.
Yes.
You're saying, I'm this new person and I have transformed both physically, emotionally, authentically, and otherwise. But you're still actually being manitas in some core key ways, not in its totality, but in some core key ways. And that manifests for me most potently in that fight with her and Jesse, where she abuses her. Like, let's call a fucking spade a spade. This is an abusive partner, somebody who has power over this person, financially or otherwise, and feels entitled to not only control them, but physically dominate them. Yeah. And it's not okay. And it's not a good scene to watch. And again, it doesn't speak to, I think the story that is trying to be told here is this redemption of Emilia,
right?
And this transformation of Emilia. And she becomes, by the end of it, literally personified as a saint after the climax of this film.
The streets of Paris are just out and about in a parade in Emilia's honor.
Yeah. And you're trying to tell me that this person is now gets to be edified as this, literally a saint. And she just hasn't earned that. I don't see it. I don't buy it. And there's so much, like I said, of manitas that takes hold, where I think this film thinks it's going is this like beautiful tragedy, right? It thinks it's
right.
There's so many callbacks to me of Baz Luhrmann, Romeo Juliet, the aesthetics, the shots, the story, the tragedy. He's trying to wrap that style and that Shakespeare and that tragedy and that redemption arc all into one, but also with this really sad ending and saying, well, at least we learned this from this. And that is where, to me, again, it's not super original. Like, no. They're like, oh, this is a really great, he's a visionary director. Somebody said in one of the million comments that I read about this, it's like, oh, you're a genius. Where's this genius? I don't see the genius. I see interesting shots, beautiful color schemes and aesthetics. I see beautiful environments. I see a baseline story that is interesting, but could have been better if you had actually fleshed it out. And I see some really awesome performances that you didn't support in your writing.
Right. I see somebody who wanted to make a musical. They were just like, I could do this. Yeah. Let's make this motion picture. And how can I fill these gaps of what people are going to kind of like and what's going to make it, a little edgy. And I just, it falls apart for me, especially in that last act that you were alluding to. I also feel like we don't see Emilia really face any consequences. They kind of hint at it throughout of, you keep waiting for the other shoe to drop, of someone's going to recognize her or someone's going to put two and two together of what's going on here. And there's all these corrupt people around her from her past. None of that ever plays out. The only reason Emilia faces any consequence for her past is not even that she has Gustavo beat up and threatened of, like, get the fuck out of town. It's that she withholds money and tries to bankrupt her ex-wife to not leave with the kids.
Which, again,
that's why there are consequences.
Which, again, is an indictment of Jesse as well. So, like, who do you want me to care about here? At the end of the day, the only person you seem to want me to care about and believe in any goodness of this person is Rita, who is giving a lot of people a lot of grace. And she... And then Jesse and Emilia come to a head with Gustavo, and they all fucking die. And also, I felt nothing.
A scene from another movie. The shootout, was not a great shootout. It feels like it's supposed to be this sort of powder keg and finally everything's exploding, but I didn't feel that tension.
It's trying to be the OK Corral and it is not, right? It's like, watch Tombstone, jocks. Like, you don't know what the fuck you're doing because it was a shitty shootout. And again, you have not invested enough in these characters to begin with to care what happens to them. And then as it's happening, in theory, all these steps after the shootout, she's dragged out, she's thrown in the trunk, all these things. You should feel some suspense, some anxiety, should be upset about it.
Yeah. I was just kind of like not sure what I was watching. And then by the time the car speeds away and we get some pretty, I'm not going to call it terrible, but some pretty rough CGI of that car speeding around corners and then falling off a cliff. Why not make that practical? It just looks silly. And then the car explodes. We get this sort of half-assed ending where we don't even know how Epifania feels about all this stuff. We don't see her after that last scene with Rita. And then it's just Rita hugs the kid, says, I'll take care of you. And that's the end of the fucking movie. Like, it just...
Well, you see her behind the effigy of Amelia, actually. Oh, okay.
I missed that. Sorry.
But I think that's an important call out, though, of like, you do get this very half-ass ending, right? You get a jump to this other half-ass ending. You don't understand if Rita has been trying to find her bliss this whole time, like, right? She's not the lawyer she wants to be. She did all these other things. And now this particular vocation has given her a purpose. In theory, sort of, doesn't totally connect those dots. And then Amelia dies. She's devastated. That's her friend, which they have become close, which, by the way, Rita sells me on more than Amelia. And then Jesse dies, Gustavo dies, Amelia dies, and she takes the kids. And do you feel like the kids are going to be well taken care of? Of course. Do you feel for the kids and the fucking roller coaster that they have been on? Of course. But beyond that, to me, there's not a lot of emotional dynamic with those scenes and with that situation. And then you cut to Epifania is walking behind her effigy as a saint and trying to make her this heroine of the people, which maybe she redeemed herself. Okay, let's just argue that she did for a quick second. Maybe she redeemed herself for her prior behavior as Manitas and the murders that she was responsible for. And let's also maybe write off that that's a product of her upbringing. Fine. She is certainly not a saint.
Right.
Like, do not sell me on that. This is not the Virgen de Guadalupe going down the street. Like, you're not going to sell me on that. That was an insane scene to me. And what a weird ending.
I feel like that redemption arc stuff only takes up maybe 25%, 20% of the film, where she's doing the benefits. She's helping find bodies of people that she killed or people she knew killed. But that's about it. So I don't understand how that's as heroic as they're making her out to be. I don't know.
And I get she's trying to undo bad deeds, both of herself and other sicarios that she knows. And maybe she never wanted to be that. And that's fine. But again, it doesn't then make her a saint. I'm not the harbinger of karmic justice here. Like, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the scales do not feel anywhere close to even to me by the end of this for her to be able to be an effigy of a saint. I am not here for it. And it feels like an abrupt ending to this story. I feel like the last 20 minutes go really fast and are really incomplete. I mean, for lack of a better term, I just feel like there needed to have been more done with this. And there are things that I enjoyed. I liked some of the music. I liked the musical aspect. I love Zoe Saldana's performance. I love the choreography. I love the color schemes. I love the way this thing is shot. I actually like the crux of the story. I just don't think that this person did a good job of telling it.
Yeah, totally agree. That last act just kind of falls really flat for me, where I just went, how did we get to this of all things? It just, with the exception of the couple really good scenes with her and Jesse, it didn't feel like this was what the ultimate conflict was going to end up being. It just felt like she would face some sort of reckoning from her past, and that it doesn't play out in that way, which you can say, oh, look, took a hard left turn. You didn't see that coming, but it doesn't mean that's enjoyable.
It's anticlimactic. It just truly is. I mean, and I'm not saying like do a story for the climax, but it is anticlimactic, and it doesn't follow the many arcs of the story that would have been more interesting. I'm not even just talking about where do you think it should have gone? What would have been more interesting? And it just wasn't. It literally fell flat for me of like, cool, they just blew off a cliff and now we're done here. Cool. What did I just watch?
I think if you go with my earlier theory that this is intentionally campy,
it gets more enjoyable.
It gets more. If you watch it as just silliness, again, not putting down any communities out there or saying that the representation in this is bad. I just think it's kind of a silly script, honestly. The songs are goofy and not very good to me. I just feel like because it's campy, I think that leaves it open to a sequel, Mackenzie. I think we could have a movie where Amelia becomes a cyborg. She's a female cyborg in the second one, and it's like 3M1L1A, and that's the next one. And then we'll get some fucking closure, and she goes to reckon with the bad guys in Paris. I don't know.
Do you hear the reach, guys? Do you hear the reach that we are going for? I support it because I need some joy to come out of this. It was not. And it's weird. I still even right now have such a pull back and forth with this. If I wanted to like it, I want this groundbreaking number of nominations and this groundbreaking cast and all these things to matter and to mean something. I have such a, I don't know, obligation to that. I just can't connect those dots almost. And I wanted to love this. And again, would I have had a completely different experience not knowing these other things? I do have to caveat this one more time. Probably it would have been better. I don't know that it would have been as good as the people that I know who personally have just fucking loved it and raved over it. Would it have been that? No. But would it have been a 5? Maybe not. But I didn't really enjoy this as much as I wanted to, for sure.
I mean, I watched it, like, knowing the stuff, I still put that out of my head and watched it of just, let me clean slate this and just see how this goes. And then throughout the film, I didn't even know it wasn't partially based on a true story in any capacity. I assumed going in, oh, well, there's probably some kind of truth to this. But then when you know it's fictional characters, it's like, you had so many ways you could have made this more interesting and made the characters more sympathetic in some ways, or had the climax play out differently. It just, yeah. So even as a fucking straight white man watching this and being as open-minded as possible about the film as a whole, I came out just not fucking having a good time. I just didn't think the script was that good. It just left a bad taste in my mouth.
And I love a musical where, like, there are lots of musicals, by the way, that do not tell the best story. Like, that is not the thing that it is about, right? It is about the performance and the way that it's shot or the songs or whatever. But none of those respective things here for me were strong enough to make up for all those other factors that I was not able to successfully put out of my mind, for sure. I tried, but I know that I wasn't. I know that it informed this watch. So I hope that people who really love it continue to love it and maybe just don't listen to this episode because we were not fans.
No, I was going to say, actually, we started this episode by giving 1-star reviews of Best Picture winners. So maybe that was a little like a... what, back of my consciousness
foreshadowing
for me
here.
Of just we're allowed to disagree. Just because somebody doesn't like the thing you like doesn't mean that they're insulting you or your taste. So if you love this movie, keep fucking loving it. And I think if whether you love
have
it
a great time.
As a deep and meaningful piece of art, whether you love it because of representation, which we both do, or least part of the representation, or whether you love it as being kind of silly and over the top and campy, which again is my running theory. I'll see y'all in 10 years to see if I was
gonna
right
say
or not.
We'll rewatch it in 10 years, we'll come back, we'll have a follow-up.
Do a 10-year anniversary of this episode. I just, there's nothing wrong with having your own opinions on this. And if you love it, we're not telling you you're wrong. We just, want you to be a little bit informed about why some people don't love it,
And we have some feelings about it, and that's just the reality. So I would say I would give this fucker a 5 out of 10. What about you?
I was right there in line with you. I would put it probably right there on the line of a five. I think it's worth watching. I think anything I put under a five would be a do not watch this.
Yeah.
So I would tell people just watch it, make your own opinions, and maybe it doesn't help to be a little bit informed, even if you wait till afterward to figure out where some of the controversy is coming from. The one thing I will say about it that I didn't mention in my notes is it doesn't look like a lot of other musicals that I've seen. I give it that. It looks darker, grittier. The lighting is a little different.
It looks very Baz Luhrmann, though. It does. It does look. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, by the way. I'm just saying this guy is not an original genius. That's all I'm saying. Well, all that to say, again, we do think you should watch this, especially if you like musicals and if you're curious about Oscar noms. Like, there's a number of reasons to watch this. It just wasn't our favorite, and at least on my front, it was largely to do with a lot of the background noise of this film. But I don't think it's the best made film. I think it was the campaign for it for the Oscars was a product of a number of factors that weren't all just about how good it was. So anyway, thanks for joining us and listening to us rage, cry, laugh, all the things. But we're super excited because this is the beginning of a new month for us that I'm personally really looking forward to as a response to February and Valentine's Day and all the lovey-dovey commercial nonsense of that. We introduce March as Love Stinks.
Yeah, I think we had thrown this out there to potentially do this in a February the last 2 years, but it's so convenient to do the Oscar nominated films. So because we're never probably going to do this in February, March made the most sense. Everyone's fucking depressed anyway, so.
Yeah, I mean, things aren't going great in real life, in March in general, politics, especially in the US, life is wild. So what we're going to do is spend some time talking about some not so romantic stories, which I personally think is great. I'm not a huge fan of Valentine's Day. This is my favorite response to it. So we're going to start off with what I think is a real gem, Gone Girl, which kicking us off with a bang, I think, personally.
I think there's a wide variety. A bunch of you probably heard this month, this theme title, and had ideas in your head. And we went in four very different directions. So I think you're going to appreciate the variety.
We have a solid, I think, representation here. This is just a real, like, we're at 100 day one.
Sometimes marriage is hard, you know? So
I have been married. I can agree with this. We will get there. But anyways, come back next week to listen to us chat about that. But in the meantime,
follow us on our socials. We drink and we watch things. And follow our drink maker at Craft World as well. But yeah, follow us on Instagram for the most part. That's where we post all of our reels and whatnot. We also have a TikTok that we don't, I mean, we post the reels, but I don't think anybody
does it count? I don't know. We have YouTube Shorts now, though.
Yes, we did do that. We're going to start posting our reels on there, so get a little bit of traction on there. You can also watch us on YouTube if you want to see the video. We're on Spotify video, but if you want to stick with the more traditional audio, just wherever you get podcasts, give us a like, a follow, a review would be nice. We could get our review count up. So yeah, and you could also email us anytime at wedrinkandwewatchthingspod@gmail.com. So any feedback you have or suggestions.
Was that enough calls to action for you guys? I don't think so. Thank you so much.
Pick one. You don't have to do all of them. Pick one of them. And run with it.
We want you to do all the things, but just pick one. But for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.
Look how I'm completely out of my beverage because I had to drink my way through that one. All right.